throws. It's good to Lofton.
At the 10, at the 5. Touchdown! Touchdown!
The John Murphy Show is on the air.
Here's into the end zone, and it is caught for the touchdown. Sammy Watkins, touchdown Buffalo. Touchdown Sammy Watkins.
It's showtime. It's go time. Let's go, baby.
Dominate on three. 1, 2, 3.
Dominate. Let's go.
And he's going to be sacked again. He is dropped again.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO, the official convenience store of the Buffalo Bills.
From One Bills Drive, we'll talk about the Buffalo Bills tonight. HBO's Hard Knocks has decided to go with the Houston Texans. You wish the Bills would have been their choice. Phone in and let us know what you think about that. Albert Breer of the NFL Network in town covering the Bills. He'll be joining us in studio live at 7:30. Manny Lawson, outside linebacker, in studio with us at 10 after 8. And the Bills with the 7th-ranked uniform in the National Football League. We'll talk about the man who put the list together at 8:30.
If we're all in it, if we're all in it together, we'll win.
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO on Buffalo Bills Radio.
How do you do that? How do you rank uniforms? It just struck me how odd that is. But we're gonna talk about it tonight at 8:30. Good evening. Welcome to the show. I jumped the queue, Jay. You weren't ready for me, but I'm ready. I'm ready to do this show.
It was in midair, but go ahead.
2 hours of radio entertainment coming your way tonight, live from One Bills Drive, where, yes, the weather has turned the last few minutes. We got a little rain, a little wind, a little stormy out there in Orchard Park. It's been that kind of a day here all day long. We had sunshine in the morning at the beginning of the organized team activity, session number 2. And then we had rain, and pretty heavy rain during the session as it went along. And then at the end, it got nice again. And it's been that way back and forth all day long here in Orchard Park, New York. We're here to talk Bills football and the NFL for the next couple of hours. You heard the lineup. We're going to try to get with Albert Breer of the NFL Network at 7:30 or so. He's got a live hit on the network around that time, and we'll walk him around the corner into our studio, we hope, right after that, and talk with him a little bit about what he observed here at One Bills Drive today. A couple of other league issues. Albert kind of makes his way all around the league, and he's been a good friend of the show. We look forward, hopefully, to having him in here when he's done with his pain gig. Coming up a little bit after 8 o'clock, Manny Lawson will join us. Bills outside linebacker this year, defensive end last year, outside linebacker this year. We'll talk with him about that transition, about this defense. If you go back 2 years, Manny, if you look at the numbers, production, if you look at his grades, courtesy of ProFootballFocus.com, Manny Lawson had a considerably better year in 2013 as opposed to 2014. In other words, in the 3-4 defense of Mike Pettine as an outside linebacker compared to the 4-3 defense of Jim Schwartz as a defensive end. That could bode well for the Bills and Manny Lawson this season. In fact, he got about half as many snaps last year than he did the year before. He was more of a situational type player last year. He doesn't miss any games. I looked it up. I think he's missed 3 games in the last 7 years, and he's moving into his 10th year in the league. Manny Lawson will be in studio with us. We'll talk about longevity, about playing in the league for 10 years, about playing outside linebacker as opposed to defensive end, all of that with Manny Lawson. Good to have him back around Orchard Park these days. And then coming up at 8:30, NFL uniforms. There is a group that ranks sports uniforms, the UniWatch. And the man who is behind it, his name is Paul Lucas. And he'll be live on the line with us tonight at 8:30. He's got the Bills uniforms ranked number 7. In the National Football League. 7, down from number 4 a year ago. The Bills' classic uniforms. The reason they went down, the blue-on-blue they wore when they beat the Green Bay Packers last December. We'll talk with Paul Lucas about that. We want to open up the phones for a couple of things. That's one of them. How do you like the Bills' uniforms? What would you change about the Bills' uniforms? And does 7 seem about right in terms of ranking the NFL uniforms? Use whatever criteria you want. Whatever you want to judge uniforms. Phone lines open, 803-0550, or from outside Buffalo, toll-free at 1-888-550-2550. You can do it via Twitter at John Murphy Show. Are you good with the Bills uniforms as presently constituted? They've gone through a couple of changes in recent years. Looks like they've settled on the white helmet with the red buffalo on the side and with the shade of blue, kind of a throwback to where they were in the glory years of the franchise. Give us your thoughts on that. Also on the table tonight, HBO's Hard Knocks. The announcement became official today. Hard Knocks this year, the Houston Texans will be in the HBO Hard Knocks Spotlight. You know what that's all about, too? The all-access HBO documentary series Hard Knocks. First year, the Texans will be the subject of the show, which means a heavy dose of second-year head coach Bill O'Brien and an extremely heavy dose of superstar J.J. Watt. He is going to be a, if he's not already, he certainly will be a household name by the end of Hard Knocks this year. Hard Knocks has featured the Ravens, the Chiefs, the Jets, the Dolphins, the Falcons once each. The Cowboys and the Bengals have been featured twice. Teams can refuse the show if they have a new head coach, if they've been to the playoffs in the past two seasons, or if they've been the subject of the show over the last 10 years. The Houston Texans fit none of those criteria, so they're it. HBO's Hard Knocks going to the Houston Texans. How would you feel if the Bills were in Hard Knocks this year? Would you be up for that? Give us a call. Let us know what you think. 803-0550. Or from outside Buffalo, it's a toll-free call at 1-888-550-2550. It's the 10th season of HBO Hard Knocks. It'll start in mid-August, August 11th this year. And the Houston Texans, I think, will be interesting. It's always interesting. It's an extremely well-produced, well-made series. The Houston Texans, I think, are not the kind of team that you know, a lot of people have an interest in, but I'm sure Hard Knocks will get a great audience because of what they do. And here's what happens. I'm reading from the Hard Knocks release here. A 30-person film crew from NFL Films will go to the Texans training camp at their team headquarters in Houston. They'll shoot more than 1,500 hours of footage over the course of the series. Camera and sound crews will have unencumbered access to the players and coaches' meeting rooms, training rooms, living quarters, and practice fields. All access, Hard Knocks. It's what makes it a great show. Would you like that for the Bills? It's not going to happen this year, but some year. And maybe you would have liked it for this year with Rex Ryan. Certainly, Rex Ryan helped put Hard Knocks on the map. They were up and running before he did it with the Jets in 2010, but for my money, the 2010 season of Hard Knocks, by far the most entertaining of the seasons on Hard Knocks so far. They got three sports Emmys that year, including Outstanding Edited Series. I think a lot of it because of Rex Ryan and what he did that year. Here's something to know when you consider this, whether you'd want the Bills on there. Each of the last five teams featured on Hard Knocks has improved its one-loss record in the regular season immediately after the Hard Knocks appearance. So you might think to yourself, why would I want that? Why would I want Hard Knocks and those 30-person film crew prying into every nook and cranny of my training camp? They did it with the Falcons last year. They did it with the Dolphins a couple of years ago. It can't do anything but hurt my team, right? Why would I want that? Well, over the last 5 years, each team has improved its one-loss record after they were on Hard Knocks from the series before. Just something to consider. This is from the release. Each of the last five teams featured on Hard Knocks has improved its one-loss record in the regular season immediately following the training camp presentation. Here's the upside. What would be good about the Bills on Hard Knocks if it were going to be this year? It's not. It's going with the Houston Texans. But what would you like about it? It would be obviously entertaining with Rex Ryan and his coaching staff. There are some characters, some veteran characters on this coaching staff. It would feature, I'm sure, what's expected to be a pretty intense battle for the starting quarterback job between E.J. Manuel, Matt Cassel, and Tyrod Taylor. I'm sure that would be a focal point for the franchise. You would have a superstar presence in LeSean McCoy. You would have a budding young star in Sammy Watkins, and you'd have this Buffalo defense with big names all over it. Mario Williams, Kyle Williams, Marcel Darius. I think the Bills would be a hit on Hard Knocks. You'd have the beautiful facility at St. John Fisher College as part of Hard Knocks. You would have, they have a Thursday night nationally televised preseason game in week two, Thursday, August 20th against the Cleveland Browns. And if it doesn't hurt you in the one-loss department, what's the downside to being on Hard Knocks? All right, let me make the other argument. The downside, unfettered access, prying into personnel decisions. Not that anyone would get anything from a competitive standpoint from it, but I don't know if teams are willing, any team, including the Bills, are willing to have their souls exposed the way that teams are on Hard Knocks. So it's the Houston Texans this year. It's not going to be the Buffalo Bills. We've known that for a while. The Bills have said a couple of times that they were not interested in being the Hard Knocks team this year. Eventually, you would think they're going to have to be because eventually they will fit the criteria. Well, what do you think? Do you wish the Bills would have been the Hard Knocks team this season? And do you look forward to it coming down the pike in the next year or so? Give us a call. Let us know what you think. 803 0550 is the number to call. From outside Buffalo, toll-free call 1-888-550-2550. Or you can do it via Twitter at John Murphy Show. A couple of tweets on this already. Joshua sent, don't care if they're on Hard Knocks. On-field success is all that matters. On-screen activities are useless. Eric near Buffalo tweets in, no, he doesn't want him on Hard Knocks. Why let the entire league see anything you're working on scheme-wise? Bills' number one fan, this is interesting, tweets in, best time to do Hard Knocks for the Bills was last year. There was a genuine story there that was bigger than just the game. I think he makes a good point. Even though it was last year's coaching staff, you look at what was going on around the franchise, the ownership questions surrounding the franchise a year ago, I think that would have been a good year. And I think it would have been a very interesting Hard Knocks. He goes on to say, what the Bills went through last year as an organization, I only wish it were documented because it was so extraordinary. And that might include even the Jim Kelly struggle last year. Matt Williams tweets in, some behind-the-scenes action would be delicious, not to discredit the great work of Mr. Murphy and Mr. Brown, Chris Brown, of course. Burn One asked if the Bills, he'd like to see the Bills on Hard Knocks. One-word answer, no. He would not like to see the Bills on Hard Knocks. Justin Westfall, I'm glad they're not featured. Let the coaches and players focus on football and not worry about all the cameras. Rex allowing minimal media coverage at OTAs, he goes on to say, tells me he is happy they are not a part of it. Phil Brady tweets in, nope, the distraction just to appear on a reality show during training camp isn't worth it. Charlie Oswald tweets in, it would be cool to watch the Bills on Hard Knocks, but I don't want them to do it because of the distraction. Brenda Lacey tweets, I'd love seeing Rex Ryan when the Jets were on Hard Knocks. Would love to hear him tell the Bills players to go have a snack. One of the great moments in Hard Knocks history. And Vince Guarino on the other side says, Hard Knocks would give us an intimate connection to our team. There is a trade-off there. There's no question. The trade-off being the connection to your team, the inside access that you'd see nowhere else, really. We try to do it on our website, get as much behind-the-scenes access as we can. But when Hard Knocks comes in, when the 30-person NFL Films crew comes in, they virtually have the run of the place, I think. I mean, I'm sure there have been occasions when they're tossed out of the room, when there are delicate conversations going on. But that would be an amazing behind-the-scenes, under-the-lid look at exactly what goes on. And I think it would be fascinating, especially for a team that you care about. What kind of a distraction does it provide? I don't know. You know, over the years, we've talked to players from other teams who've come here and asked them about the Hard Knocks experience, and I think they sort of dismiss it as really not anything that was that much of a distraction. I mean, I can't think of names right off the top of my head, but I know when we've talked to players about it and coaches who've been here in Buffalo and have come from a place where they did Hard Knocks, I don't recall any of them, Jay, saying, yeah, that was a pain in the neck. They were up in our face all the time. We couldn't cut out. I don't know how much a distraction it turned out to be.
No, most recently it was John Connor. His time on Hard Knocks. And I just think they're there, but I don't think they intrude or
I don't either.
Get in there too much.
No. And I think these players and coaches in the current era are used to having all of their – they're used to having media around, right? We're in their face. Media here all the time in their face. I think they're kind of used to it.
Yeah.
They're accustomed to it. Let's take a call. Ron calling from his car. Your thoughts on Hard Knocks. Would it be good for the Bills, Ron?
You know, I really don't think so. I think it's the first year under Rex, and I think the team needs to come together and get to know him. And I think Hard Knocks would be a distraction for the first year.
Well, it's likely one of these years the Bills are likely to be on it, I would think, right? I mean, eventually they're going to have all the qualifications. They're a team that's never done it. And, you know, as long as Rex Ryan's coaching this team, they're going to be a team that I think draws some national attention. So eventually they're going to be on it. You just think not this year. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I just think give the team a chance to get together and get to know the coach. And after that, it probably would be good for the team in a way.
All right. Thanks, Ron. Thanks for calling. Hard Knocks going to the Houston Texans this year. We knew they were not going to the Buffalo Bills, not coming to the Buffalo Bills. But how do you feel about that? Give us a call. 803-0550 is the number. Toll free from outside Buffalo, 1-888-550-2550. You know, I think about all the times we get calls from people who say, oh, I wish the Bills get shortchanged by the national media. They don't get any attention. Hard Knocks would be the way. To make sure that they do not get shortchanged, right? It really would. Hard Knocks would be the way to make sure that they are not shortchanged, that they would be a team with a national profile. And yet it sounds like Nobody wants to really consider, you know, the downside, which may be, a distraction. Although, again, every time we've talked to anybody about it, they talk about, they don't mention a distraction, anybody who's been through it. Here at One Bills Drive, the Bills got through day two of organized team activity today on the field. As I said, through a little bit of a rainstorm on the grass practice field, the beautiful new grass practice field outside the Ad Pro Sports Fieldhouse, all present and accounted for the most part. The quarterback competition on everybody's mind. We've talked a lot about Manuel. We've talked a lot about Castle. And a lot of people talk about Tyrod Taylor. Rex Ryan talked about him today. He was asked if Tyrod Taylor, sort of the unknown quarterback in this three-man Bills quarterback competition.
I can get that because he is an unknown. You know, we've never played a whole lot in Baltimore and things. But everybody knows about the physical, you know, the traits that he has, the speed and the, and that type of stuff, which is unusual. So I get that. But I think they all have something to prove. How they're going to be in this system, we're going to find out. You know, some quarterbacks flourish in certain systems. And I believe all three guys will have a chance to be successful. I hope that's the case. And where it's going to be, you know, hopefully that decision is going to be tough on a good note. Not that this guy wins it by default. But I believe, you know, that we're going to have, you know, a good competition at it. It'll be a, you know, all guys are getting reps. You saw today how that, you know, two drills going at once might be hard to follow, but the reps are so much different, you know, set up this way. And like I mentioned, you know, yesterday you had where the third group may only get through a practice, would have only gotten seven reps if I would have kept the same way of doing things, and now they're getting 30 reps. So it's a big difference.
Rex Ryan talking about his quarterback competition and talk about the practice that he mentioned yesterday about having two sets of teamwork on opposite ends of the field, 11-on-11, and a little bit of 7-on-7, too, offense versus defense, just more reps. He said the numbers there, you know, instead of seven reps for the third stringers, now they get 30 reps. Tyrod Taylor, too, the focus of attention. As a matter of fact, Tyrod's going to be on the air with us tomorrow night. He'll be in studio with us tomorrow night at 7:30. Got a call about Tyrod Taylor, a call here from Louie in Stony Creek, Ontario. Go ahead, Louie, you're on the air.
Hey, John. I like your show a lot. I really enjoy it immensely. I'd like to talk about Tyrod Taylor, if I may. I would love to see him be the starter for our team. Based on the fact that here's a guy that Rex Ryan has followed for a little while. He wanted to bring him into the Jets, I think maybe more than once. I'm not sure about that, but not. But the guy has been in the NFL for 4 years, and I know he hasn't started, but at least he's been through the vigors of a training camp. He's played preseason. So he's played under multiple offensive coordinators, so he knows different systems. And I just think, physically speaking, he's got a great arm and he's got great legs. And you know what? He's going to make mistakes more than Matt Castle. I understand that. But I just think that the potential to be really, really good is there. You know, it's not like being in a rookie. And a rookie is more raw. He's got to go through the learning process, the curve from college to NFL. I think he's done that. I just think now he just needs his time. This is his time to shine and improve it. You can't tell whether the guy's going to be good or not until you play him, right? You know, Minnesota Vikings, Bridgewater, he wouldn't have had his chance if Castle got hurt. You know, I just think this guy needs a shot.
All right, thanks. Yeah, I mean, he's getting a chance here after those 4 years in Baltimore. He has the least experience of the three contenders here. EJ's had 14 starts. Matt Castle's been in the league for 9 years. Tyrod Taylor, 4 years, but very limited playing experience, very limited experience most recently last year. But he's getting his chance. He's getting his chance right now. And do I want to commit to him now as a starter? No, but I think the Bills are doing a pretty good job of opening the job up and giving Tyrod Taylor a chance. We'll see how Tyrod feels about it tomorrow night when he's on the show with us at 7:30. Call here from Vince in Tampa. Vince, you have some thoughts on Hard Knocks?
I do, John. You know, first, how you doing?
Great.
How you doing? You know, I'll be honest with you. I hear a lot of people always saying no, that they don't want to see it. It's going to be too much of a distraction. I'm on the opposite end of the spectrum on that one. I would absolutely love it. I would love to be able to, you know, see the front office in action, you know, behind the scenes, not just what we hear and see, you know, through media clips. I'd love to be able to be in the room to watch EJ Manuel, Tyrod Taylor, Matt Castle, you know, see those guys talking and on the whiteboards or, you know, going over film and, you know, be able to see the rookies, right?
Yeah.
Be able to see a Williams, a Darby, you know, to be able to see these guys. And the storyline, you know, you had mentioned somebody referenced last year would have been a great storyline. You know what? This year would have been just as good, right? Because you still would have had Pegula and you know, them taking over, probably would have talked a little bit about the Sabres as well. And, you know, still with Kelly, you know, we would get that. There's just so much to talk about this organization. And, you know, not to mention, you know, we're on the cusp. I mean, this is the perfect time.
Yeah, Vince, I think you make some good points. You probably have convinced me. I mean, originally, a week ago, I would have said, who needs Hard Knocks? The more I think about it, I think I would like it. It would be a pain in the neck for those of us covering the team to have the film crews around? Yeah, it probably would be a little bit. But it would be must-see TV, I think, for any Bills fans. And the point you make, Vince, about the meeting rooms, I think, is critical. I think in the meeting rooms, if you think of past Hard Knocks documentaries, you get to see like body language and work habits. You get to see how these guys go about their work. All these players, quarterback room, receivers room. You get to see how the coaches approach their work, and I think it's kind of an eye opener. I think it. For those who come off well, I think they develop a brand, they develop an image that they probably never lose throughout the rest of their career. And that, I think, is the benefit to being on Hard Knocks for players and organizations and teams. It won't be Buffalo this year, we know that. Going to be the Houston Texans. But when Hard Knocks is ready to come to the Buffalo Bills, I welcome it. I embrace it. I hope I don't regret saying that, Jay, but I do. I think Bills fans will embrace it too, and not because – you know, the standard, nobody pays attention to us, we need to have more publicity. I think it'll open up the door to an all-access view of how things really, how business is conducted. And from what I know from being around here for almost 3 years now on the inside, sort of, people appreciate how hard people work, how hard coaches work, how serious players take it. I think there's a story there to be told that Bills fans would appreciate.
Bills fans would definitely appreciate it. How many times do people come up to us, and we don't get that much access? I mean, we get our share of access, but how many times do people come up to you, you work for the Bills, and they want to know in and out, you see the coaches, they walk by, they hold the doors for you or whatever? Yeah. I mean, they would love to see that.
I think fans might be blown away by the level of commitment and the time that goes into they're putting this thing together on the players. You know, you've seen the players walk in here to do an interview with us. They have their tablet in hand so they
backpack
the tablet. They take the tablet home, look at plays. I mean, we just talked to players today about that. I think people would be blown away if they saw how hard these players work. Hey, before we get off the Bills and get to more phone calls and hope to get Albert Breer in here in a moment, a couple of other Bills notes from practice today. Corey Graham, going into his ninth year in the NFL, came to the Bills as a free agent cornerback, special teamer last year, wound up starting 9 games at corner last year as a corner in the slot and as an outside corner. Right now, the Bills have moved him over to safety. Corey Graham working at safety at this OTAs, and Corey talked about that when he met with the media today.
Well, we've been talking about the whole offseason, so it's nothing new. Yesterday, we pretty much made the decision that I was going to go and try to focus on it a little bit, so I'm preparing myself for training camp, so I'll be ready. So we got 3 weeks left to get ready for it, and I'll learn as much as I possibly can and see where it goes.
How permanent do you think that is, I mean, in terms of where you'll be in training camp?
I don't know. I mean, I can play both. I can play corner. I can play safety. But right now, to be honest with you, I want to focus on safety. I want to try to really learn it and see where it goes, see how much I grasp it, see how I'm playing at it, see where it can take me. You know, when you get older in your career, sometimes you move to different positions. So I look forward to it. It's a challenge for me, but I'm very excited about it.
I was glad to hear Corey say that today, that he is embracing the look at safety that the Buffalo Bills are giving him. Rex Ryan talked about it after practice today, too, about working Corey Graham in with safety reps this week.
We've worked him a lot at corner. We're confident that he can jump right back, you know, in there. He's going to need a lot of reps at safety. So that's where he's going to be getting the majority of his work. I'm not saying he won't go to corner because I'm sure he'll play some there, but we really want him to focus on safety right now. And then, you know, could he see time at nickel as well? He may. But I really want him to focus on safety, lead him into that where he's confident going into training camp where he can do all those things, corner, nickel, and safety.
One more thing, Rex, were you just one a veteran guy? I mean, because Duke is not a veteran guy stepping in there. Neither is Rambo. You want a guy who's got some, you know, NFL experience to play, at least try to play that position?
Well, I just want to give him a shot at, you know, you want to get your best 11 on the field. And this provides, you know, him an opportunity if you feel good at, you know, with Leotis and also feel great with Corey being a corner as well. But he's got that you know, unique ability where he can do both things. And so let's see what we have out there. And this is no, you know, slam on Duke or on Rambo or on Meeks or, you know, any of those guys. But this is us doing, you know, what's best for the team. And if that means Corey, we feel good about him playing safety, then that's where he'll be.
That's Rex Ryan talking about Corey Graham working at safety these days in OTA. I think that's a fairly significant development. You'll recall that over a year ago, then-coach Doug Marrone kind of broached that topic, said maybe we'll give Corey Graham a look at safety. It never really materialized last year. They used him as a nickel corner, and then the nickel corners were playing well, Nickel Roby, and they decided to let Corey Graham play wherever he could. And then Leotis got hurt around midseason, and Corey Graham stepped in and started, as I said, the final, he started 9 games total last year. But I think it's smart for the team and for Corey Graham. For the team, I mean, who would not benefit from having an intelligent, experienced guy like Corey Graham in the backfield? For Corey Graham, who will be 30 years old when they kick off the season, I believe he turns 30 this July, it's an opportunity to potentially extend his career, as has been done successfully by some great players over the years. And I think Corey Graham has the makeup and the mindset to be a pretty good contributor at safety. So we'll see how that plays out. As Rex Ryan said, nothing is set in stone. It's they're working him there this week. But I'd be surprised if Corey Graham didn't stay at safety, and I'd be surprised if he didn't compete and perhaps win the starting job moving forward. All right, we're going to take a break. We got a lot more to come. Next hour, we'll talk about NFL uniforms. Bills currently rank 7th. On UniWatch Power Rankings. We'll talk about that. Manny Lawson's going to be in studio with us coming up next hour as well, and we hope to hear from Albert Breer of the NFL Network coming up as well. It is the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. We are live from One Bills Drive tonight. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We are live from One Bills Drive tonight, the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. Manny Lawson is going to be in studio with us next hour. We're going to talk about NFL uniforms next hour as well. The Bills uniforms ranked number 7 by UniWatch. But joining us right now is, I know, Albert, it's the offseason.
It's May.
It's May. Albert Breer from the NFL Network joins us in studio fresh off his hit on All Access, Total Access. We watch the show every night, Albert, in here. It's on constantly. Now, sometimes I'll turn it for hockey or basketball a little bit later on, but it is a great show, a league-wide review of what's going on. And even this time of year, it's great to watch.
Yeah, it's hard to believe how much, you know, the attention that OTAs get. We're all over the place now, and it's just, you know, I think it's a tribute to the popularity of the sport. And you know, going to school where I went to school, and I remember what a big deal spring football was
at Ohio State.
Yeah. And in Columbus, I legitimately would tell you that the spring football season was a bigger deal than basketball season. And you can sort of feel that happening in a lot of NFL markets now, where people are paying attention to football in the spring the same way they do in those college markets, which is great for the sport.
Look at us. We're here doing the radio show 12 months a year. Albert Breer from the NFL Network. You spent a day here watching the Bills at OTAs. What did you learn? What did you take from it today?
Well, I guess not a whole lot other than not a whole lot I didn't know outside of you watch Rex, and I was around him a little bit in New York, and so I have an idea of what to expect. It resembles very closely what you saw in New York at the beginning for him, you know, and so you look at it like, you know, the potential to have an overwhelming defense, which he had in New York. They ranked 1st, 3rd, and 5th, I think, his first 3 years in New York. You know, an offense that's got big important pieces, you know, and then a question at the quarterback position.
Right.
So it lines up in a lot of ways very similar to what he walked into with the Jets, you know, and they got to 2 consecutive conference championship games, which after 15 years out of the playoffs, I'm sure people here wouldn't argue with. And I talked to him a bunch about that today, and you know, how you go from, you know, where they were in 09 and 10 to where they wound up in 13 and 14 and what he learned and, you know, how he finds a way to better sustain what he had in New York at the beginning and build on it rather than it, you know, kind of coming apart at the end.
What do you think he will do differently here so that he doesn't repeat what happened in New York?
The big thing that he pointed out to me was just being having everything lined up, and he said was that at the very beginning in New York it was lined up that way when it was him and Tannenbaum and it was his first coaching staff. Yeah. It was before they lost some of the guys they lost on that side, and he said the very beginning it was that way in New York, and they won, and slowly that he started to chip away at that. And he said the key is it's just having everybody on the same page. And one of the things that he said that he would have that he regretted and you'll see this when the story goes up tomorrow on our website. But one of the things he said he regretted in New York was not being more vocal when he saw things going wrong, mm-hmm. was not having more of an open line of communication with the owner. And he said he didn't want to blame Woody, but he said he probably would have been more vocal about it. But at that point, at the end, things became fragmented where everybody wasn't on the same page, where I think it's like anybody else's work situation where maybe you tiptoe, and he didn't say this to me explicitly, but yeah. This is kind of something I gathered, where maybe, if you're not on the same page with certain people in the building, you're going to be less willing to confront them, or there might not be as open a line of communication. And, he said ultimately that's what made him pick Buffalo over some of the other opportunities that he had out there, was that he saw the fit and he saw the things lining up the way that they should, the way it was at the beginning in New York. And he feels like he's better equipped to sustain that now over a longer period of time based on what he learned there. And, the relationship with the Pagulas, yeah. Plays into that the same way he had a good relationship with Woody, but, felt at the end he had some regret over, I should have said something a little earlier before right. It came undone.
Many of us, and I think those of us in the building here and even outside observers, believe that he has, in Greg Roman, an offensive coordinator, the likes of which he did not have in New York. Do you agree with that?
I think philosophically, probably, yeah, I agree in that, philosophically, it lines up probably a bit better than it did in New York. Now, he inherited Eric Mangini's offensive coordinator, and I think part of that was that he didn't have a guy who was just stuck out to him as mm-hmm. That's my guy, and I'm going to go, I'm come hell or high water, I'm going to go get that guy. So, he saw a good coordinator in place, and him and Schottenheimer did good things the first couple of years, and the development of the quarterback didn't work out, which I think was a major hit. Then when you see what he did in turning it over, he went to Tony Sperano, who kind of reflected his beliefs a little bit closer. That didn't wind up working out, and Sperano didn't have the play calling experience. Then they wind up going ultimately to Marty Morenwig, who's a very good coordinator. But you look at it philosophically, and it's like it just doesn't seem to work the same way. Now you look at what San Francisco has, right?
Right.
And you look at the fact that he's got background from Baltimore with Greg Roman. Now forget about who's the best quarter. We're comparing Roman versus Morningwig or versus Sperano or versus Shoddy. I think the big thing that you look at there is who lines up with Rex philosophically. And I think that, again, kind of going back to, and I think this goes for Doug Whaley too with Rex. Philosophically, what do you believe in? Well, look what the Niners were the last 4 years with Greg Roman working with Jim Harbaugh. I think that probably pretty closely reflects what Rex would have ideally in an offense, a team that'll help its defense, control the clock, that won't make a lot of mistakes, and that'll really be good at managing games and physically wear on the opponent.
Albert Breer from the NFL Network in studio with us, covering the Bills at their OTAs today. Before you got to the NFL Network, you covered the Patriots for the Globe and for the Boston Herald. Where is this Tom Brady appeal going? And we're told today that they won't even hear the appeal for another few weeks, mid-June.
The interesting thing about it to me is how it's become so much big. It's not even really about Brady and the deflated balls anymore.
No,
I mean it's
about procedure more than anything.
It's it's become about, all right, like Roger Goodell hasn't served as an appeals officer in 3 years. Well, this is a great opportunity for him to jump back up because Brady's name provides a big stage. So where Goodell lost where Goodell kind of ceded the power over appeals after the Saints thing went awry in 2012, and he's been handing it off to people like Harold Henderson. Now it's a chance to kind of grab that power back, right? And then the union looks over and sees that and says, well, wait a minute. We worked really hard to try and eradicate that and fix it. So then you have the union fighting back and saying, well, and, you know, kind of lost in the wash here is the player himself, you know. And so you look at, you know, Robert Kraft, if, you know, in this whole situation. Okay, well, you know, he wants to mend fences with Goodell. Well, it'll help him in the long term if Goodell is the appeals officer, because that helps the league in the long term. So does he talk to Brady? And then does Brady have to jump ship from the – so it's just – you can see how, like, you can get yourself tangled in a mess here, and it becomes less about the player. Where we are right now, you know, once they figure out who the arbitrator is going to be, because that's the next piece, you know, then Brady decides how he's going to proceed. And if it is Goodell, then, you know, he's got to start to take certain steps to protect himself to fight against that, you know. And so I think that the appeal date will be set for some time before, you know, NFL teams break for the summer, which we all know is mid to middle of June, right in there. And, you know, much like was the case with Ray Rice last year, and I don't want to compare those two because it's not the same, but, you know, if you look at the timeline of that, you know, it was right in June when he had his appeal, and then they wound up making a decision on it. I think it was like the first week of training camp or something like that. So I could certainly see a similar situation happening there. And my guess is that Goodell, if Goodell does hear the appeal, he'll likely reduce the suspension, maybe not eliminate it, and maybe he can try to help Brady save his legacy a little bit by saying this is for failure to cooperate and you get a fine for the violation or something, to try to entice him just to agree and be done with it. And then I think Brady's got a decision to make, you know. And I can tell you this, I know Tom's not happy. You know, I know he's very, very upset with the way all of this has gone. You know, this has been a difficult process for him because his reputation is important to him. And I think you could even see that when you heard Matt Cassel talking about it today. You know, Matt's very close with Tom. You know, sometimes you have to kind of wait to see, because same thing with Kraft. You know, Kraft was angry, and if he had, when they put up that website, if they had had to make the decision that day, they probably would have appealed and fought in court and everything else. You give it some time and you think about it again. So, you know, with Brady, okay, you go through the appeal process because you have to exhaust that before you wind up going to court for anything. You know, is he as angry in July when they've got the pads on and they're out of practice? Or does he just want to be done with it at that point? That's the question you got to ask.
Hey, Albert, thanks for popping in doing the show with us.
Anytime,
we know you've
John.
Got a lot going on. Thank you for doing this. A good friend of the show. And you can see Albert on Total Access on the NFL Network. And you've got a Bill story coming up on the website, NFL.com.
Yeah, a couple of things. But, you know, we'll be, you know, I'm going to do a little bit more on Rex and kind of what he learned in New York. It was fascinating talking to him, you know, as somebody who, you know, it just, to me, what's so interesting about it, John, and I know you guys got a break that you got to get to, but,
we're good.
You know, what's so interesting about it to me is how many coaches are successful after they get fired. And we you know, oftentimes we forget about that, you know, but
Belichick,
look, five coaches have won the Super Bowl this decade. Three of them were fired. Pete Carroll, Tom Coughlin, and Bill Belichick. All three of those guys were fired. And the one thing that I found that was interesting was the commonality between those guys is that they landed in a place where they could kind of do it their way. Mm. Now, Belichick and Carroll got personnel power and were able to kind of set things up the way they wanted to. That kind of protected them to a certain degree. And then you look at, you know, Coughlin and Belichick both went to owners that they'd known previously. Coughlin had worked for the Giants and Belichick had worked for the Patriots. And so getting themselves aligned and getting into a place where they could do it the way that they wanted to do it and kind of, you know, I'm going to succeed or fail my way. You know, that really existed there, and that was a lot of what Rex talked about, so that's what we'll be covering in the call.
It sounds like you've written the story in your head already.
I've actually already written the story on paper, too.
That's great.
You guys will see that as soon as it goes
great.
Up.
Thanks, Albert.
I appreciate it.
Albert Breer, NFL Network. Catch a story on NFL.com about Rex Ryan and the Bills tomorrow. Got more to come. The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO, from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
This is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Thanks again to Albert Breer of the NFL Network for joining us in studio. Look forward to reading that post that he's got coming up tomorrow after this conversation with Rex Ryan today, and a very good point made about second chance coaches winning Super Bowls. Belichick, Pete Carroll, Tom Coughlin. Very good point that he made. Who knows if it is borne out here, but excellent point. Got another hour to go on the show. We'd like to hear from you. The phone line's open, 803-0550, the number, or from outside Buffalo, toll-free at 1-888-550-2550. Among topics, we will discuss Hard Knocks, going to be the Houston Texans this year, not the Buffalo Bills. We knew that for the last several weeks. Would you like to see the Bills on Hard Knocks? Would you have liked them to be this year's Hard Knocks team? Give us a call. Let us know what you think about that. Anything else? Also coming up next hour, Manny Lawson will join us, and we'll talk about uniforms. The Bills' uniforms ranked 7th in the NFL by UniWatch. All coming up next hour, an hour to go, the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO. Live tonight from One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Let's go! Let's go!
And this crowd is on its feet, and it is pandemonium. And that's only the half of it.
Halftime is over. We're back with more of the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO.
Keep spilling your blood for one another. Let's go get it now. Let's go. Bills on three. 1, 2, 3. Bills.
Safety. 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 Unbelievable.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO, the official convenience store of the Buffalo Bills.
Hour number two of the show. We're here until 9 o'clock tonight. Coming up later on in the hour, we're going to talk about uniforms, NFL uniforms, the Buffalo Bills. According to the UniWatch Power Rankings Executive Committee, membership of one, Paul Lucas, our guest, the Buffalo Bills' 7th best uniforms in the National Football League. Let me read to you. We're going to talk about this at 8:30 tonight. Let me read you what Paul Lucas wrote about this on a recent post on ESPN.com. The Bills, they dropped 2 spots, I guess, from number 5 to number 7. Here's what he said about the Bills. Generally speaking, the Bills are a very good-looking team. Nice color scheme, excellent helmet, solid jersey and pants, bonus points for the striped socks. But they've been docked a notch for going mono blue for last December's game against the Packers. The first solid colored game with the team's current uniform set. Let's hope it's also the last. The Bills 7th ranked in UniWatch Power Rankings. The NFL uniforms, who's got the best? Who's got the worst? Paul Lucas will join us at the bottom of the hour to tell us. He's got the Pittsburgh Steelers with the best uniforms in the National Football League, and dead last in the NFL, the Jacksonville Jaguars. We'll talk with Paul Lucas about that at 8:30. Manny Lawson, Bill's outside linebacker. He's got an interesting story to tell, not just about football. Manny and Fred Jackson leave this Saturday for Washington, D.C. as part of the Honor Flight Buffalo's 6-year. What they're going to do, they're going to fly with a charter plane filled with World War II veterans to Washington, D.C. on Saturday. It's a trip put together by the Ralph Wilson Foundation, the Sabres Foundation, Patrick Coletta's Hits Foundation. Honor Flight Buffalo has secured a Southwest charter for the round trip. About 26 World War II veterans on board, along with Manny Lawson and Fred Jackson of the Bills. They will take a tour of the monuments in Washington, D.C. on, a couple of days after the official observance of Memorial Day. We'll talk with Manny Lawson about that. And we'll talk with him about coming back here. He's back this week for the OTAs, and he wants to talk a little bit about playing outside linebacker on this Bills team. So Manny Lawson, just a few minutes away from joining us here in studio. If you just tuned in, well, a couple of things. On our website a little bit later on, you'll be able to pick up the interview we just did with Albert Breer from the NFL Network, who was in studio with us after he did a live hit right next door for the NFL Network. Albert Breer observing the Bills at their second day of OTAs today. If you have thoughts on that, the quarterback competition, if you have thoughts on the topic that we put out there an hour ago, the Bills, not the Hard Knocks team this year. Hard Knocks, HBO's documentary Hard Knocks, going to be the Houston Texans. Are you okay with that? Do you wish the Bills were this year's Hard Knocks featured team? And do you expect the Bills will be on Hard Knocks sooner rather than later? Give us a call if you have thoughts on that. Phone line's open. 803-0550, the number. Outside Buffalo, toll-free, 1-888-552-550. We talked in the last hour with a couple of callers, and producer Jay Harris and I talked. Originally, if you had asked me this question a week or two ago, I would have said, no way, don't want Hard Knocks. You know, I think there's a good story to be told here. I really do. And I think for Bills fans, I think they would eat it up, a chance to get behind the scenes, all access, a look at what goes on at training camp. And I think they'd be most impressed with the work ethic by 99% of the players and 99% of the coaches. These guys work hard. They do now. And I think that would be kind of an eye-opener for many people. But let us know what you think about that. 803-0550, the number. Toll-free from outside Buffalo, 1-888-550-2550. Do you wish the Bills were the Hard Knocks team and not the Houston Texans this year? Let us know what you think about that. Here, day two, OTAs, the Bills outside, weathering the storm, literally, through a little bit of a rainstorm this morning. They practiced from 10 till just before 12 noon on the grass field. They did it again with their two different lines of scrimmage and teamwork and some 7-on-7 work. We talked about it with Rex Ryan last night. We wrote about it for the website, BuffaloBills.com. That story is posted as of this morning. Just the number of reps that they're able to get with the two fields in play. It strikes me there's a lot more work to be done by the coaching staff to look at video from two different snaps, but they'll work through that, especially now when they have these 90 players or so on the roster. As the roster gets cut down, the need to do that sort of two field work is probably lessened a lot. One of the things that happened today, Marcel Darius on the field for the organized team activity, day two of the OTA. Last week, the news came out that Marcel Darius will serve a one-game suspension for violating the NFL's substance abuse policy. He will miss the opener against the Indianapolis Colts. And after the workout today, Marcel Darius was asked about the suspension and his reaction.
Happy we can finally move forward with it. You know, it's been hanging over my head for a while, and just happy we can move forward and just prepare myself for the league, prepare myself for the season, and just happy to be with my friends, my guys, my real family, and just kind of just ready, just happy, just really feeling a lot better now.
Do you feel like getting only the game was kind of lucky? I mean, you maybe could have gotten more. Yeah. You feel pretty fortunate it's only a game?
I mean, just having the league really took a lean on me and just kind of let me do my one-game suspension and kind of I deal with that, and I talk with my team, and we're just kind of moving forward with it. And we're just kind of putting it all behind us and just kind of move forward and just do what we have to do.
Marcel Darius clearly in the mood to put it behind him. You know, it struck me, and I asked Marcel a follow-up question later on, it struck me that in his mind, he probably put this all behind him a little bit less than a year ago, like maybe around training camp time. I mean, the incident, all his trouble came last May, right? The incident with the substance abuse issue in Alabama, and then the turned into a traffic violation in May also last year in Hamburg, town of Hamburg. Since then, Marcel, to my mind, as an outsider, an outside observer, it seems to me he's grown up a lot, and that is well back in his rearview mirror, it seems to me. And I think the Bills feel that way as well. When, based on the way he performed last year on the field, based on the way he behaved off the field, I think the Bills feel like, yes, the suspension, one game, you know, hanging over everybody's head for a while, and that is the last piece of the puzzle. I think the Bills have a pretty good feeling that is behind Marcel Darius. Rex Ryan was asked about losing Marcel to a one-game suspension today.
Hopefully this is something that, you know, that Marcel and, you know, that and our team can learn from, that, you know, there's consequences to, you know, to your actions and things like that. And hopefully this is a one-time deal and we don't have to mess with it again. And he's learned from it. Clearly he'll be missed as a player, but we have a lot of good football players and, you know, somebody will step up. I'm confident of that. We have a lot of guys with Bryant, with Carrington, you know, specifically, and Wynn. I feel really good about those guys. Charles, this will be an opportunity for them to step up. You generally don't go through a whole season without having somebody missing some time, so this will give opportunities for somebody else. Will we miss Marcel Darius? Yeah, you know, of course.
Do you feel like this is a chapter in his career that he can finally put behind him now after he serves this one game and put that chapter of his career behind him?
Yeah, hopefully this is, you know, that's it. That, you know, this is a one-time deal, and he's learned from it. You know, people make mistakes. The league's got it set up to where, you know, there's punishments, you know, to things that you do. And obviously, you know, I support that, you know, the leagues and the way they are. But hopefully this is something that is in his past. You know, I hope it's something that's out of character for him.
Rex Ryan talking about Marcel Darius today after Darius was on the field for organized team activity. Today, day two of OTAs, 8 more to come. No OTA tomorrow, just a regular conditioning day for the Bills, veterans and rookies tomorrow, and then an OTA session on Friday. And then over the next 2 weeks after this, 7 more OTA sessions, and then the 3-day mandatory mini camp. And then what do you know? It's the third week of June. The players are gone, scatter for 4 or 5 weeks, and then training camp after that. We should know the training camp schedule, I think, very shortly. I know a lot of folks, especially, well, in Buffalo and Rochester, I was going to say especially in Rochester, but a lot of folks all over upstate New York look for that schedule, plan some trips around it, and I'm told that the training camp schedule, the nighttime practices, the schedule should be out in the next couple of days or so. So stick around for that. Another thing that came out of the OTA today, the quarterback competition, and that's going to be topic A as long as this thing is still hanging, and it's hanging right now. The first team reps today taken by E.J. Manuel and Tyrod Taylor. Matt Castle worked down at the other end of the field with the other snaps, working with the threes primarily. To my eye, observing today, it was not as strong a day throwing the ball for the quarterbacks as it was yesterday. I thought yesterday Castle and E.J. Manuel had some really good throws, a little bit less so today from the group I was watching with Manuel and Tyrod Taylor. The rain factored into it a little bit, I think, but we'll see. I mean, it's not going to be a steady climb up, and we'll see how it plays out. Rex Ryan reiterated today when he talked to the media what he told us last night here on the show, that it's probably going to be a couple of weeks, maybe even a couple of games into preseason before he decides on a starting quarterback. So we can all follow it, talk about it, ask about it, but it sounds like this coaching staff is prepared to and wants to see these guys in a competitive standpoint through a couple of preseason games before they sort it out and decide which quarterback to go with in the three-man race, whether it is Tyrod Taylor, Matt Castle, or E.J. Manuel. Tyrod Taylor, by the way, he's the people's choice, I think, in a lot of ways on our show, Jay Harris. A lot of people call up, talk about him, ask about him, people tweeting about him tonight. You'll be happy to know all of our listeners, Tyrod Taylor, will be in studio with us tomorrow night on the show.
I was just going to say that's one of the reasons why we decided to grab Tyrod Taylor.
Yes.
And ask him about coming on the show tomorrow. And I think we had to preface that by saying, hey, listen, we'd love to get you on the show. You'd have no idea how many people call in and how many people tweet. Asking about you and wanting to know progress on you and love that you're the dark horse in this quarterback competition.
I'm curious about Tyrod Taylor, too, and I want to watch him over the next few weeks and, of course, into training camp. I hope it's not a case where people fall in love with a quarterback that they've seen the least, and there could be some of that.
We've seen that before.
Yeah. Here. You've seen E.J. Manuel, 14 starts. You've seen Matt Castle through his 9 years in the league. You haven't seen a lot of Tyrod Taylor. Maybe that's why people are some people think that he's the answer. We'll find out, I think, over these next few weeks. For my money, most interesting thing to happen today at the OTA was the talk and the actual move of Corey Graham from cornerback to safety. Corey Graham, going to be 30 years old, going into his ninth year in the league. He's been a cornerback and a special teamer, really. Made himself into a corner during his stint with the Baltimore Ravens, won a Super Bowl there. Last year, got 9 starts at cornerback for the Bills. Now they have moved him to safety, at least for now. And Corey Graham was asked how things look different at the safety position as opposed to where they were at corner.
It's totally different. Yeah. It's nothing like corner. To me, corner is totally different. You're in press a lot of times. You're on the island. Safety, you got to take better angles. You're in the run fits a lot. You got to help out. You got to stay in the middle field. You got to be disciplined. You got to be smart. You got to get everybody aligned. So it's a lot more thinking at safety, I would say. But I say corner is a lot harder to actually play.
Yeah. More responsibility. When Aaron Williams made the switch, you talked about how at safety you have to take a big picture as opposed to just focusing in on one.
Yes, it is. It really is. You got to pay attention. It's not just really about what you're doing. You got to pay attention to what everybody around you is doing. You got to get everybody around you lined up. You got to think about what's going to happen if one guy motions because he can change the total defense. It's a lot more thinking. It's a lot more that you got to factor in. Corner, you pretty much is just a man, everything in this defense turns to man, to be honest with you. Some way, some fashion, it's going to turn to man. So it's totally different. It's a lot more thinking. It's a lot more studying. It's a lot more preparing, a lot more anticipating. But you can make a lot of plays if you know what you're doing.
Corey Graham talking about the transition to safety. I think, as I said earlier, it's good for both sides, for Corey Graham, his future, and for the Buffalo Bills. What does it mean for the rest of them, for Duke Williams, Bakari Rambo, Jonathan Meeks? I don't know. Stay tuned. This is not set in stone, but it appears that at least now, at least in this OTAs, Corey Graham is going to get the shot to play at safety. And let's face it, with Aaron Williams kind of hobbled a little bit, it makes sense to get those reps for Corey Graham now. And we'll see how long he stays there playing safety instead of corner. It is the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO from One Bills Drive as the organized team activities are underway. And joining us in studio, getting set for his 10th year in the National Football League, is Bills defensive outside linebacker Manny Lawson. 10 years!
10, a decade, wow.
You came in as a first-round pick. Did you anticipate that you'd spend 10 years in the league when you came into the league?
Not at all. I'm very blessed and very fortunate, you know, to be playing this game that I love still, you know, since I was a child. And, you know, to be in this league this long, I mean, words can't explain just, you know, just the joy I still feel while I'm out there on the field with the guys.
You defy the odds when you're around that long. You're like two or almost three times the average length of career.
That's right? What I've been told. I think like the average is 2.3 something along those lines, or 3.4 around there. And so, yeah, I'm one of the few. So
if a young guy were to come to you and say, I would love to play 10 years in the NFL, what would you tell him? What would be the key?
Take 1 year at a time.
Really?
Yeah, don't look too far and too far ahead, because you got to take every chance and take the initiative, and you know, whatever choices and opportunities that you have right now, you have to take and go with that, because if you don't take care of the year that you're in right now, there is no next year. So you have to take care of the year that you're playing right now.
And you've done it with three different teams now, the Niners, the Bengals, and the Buffalo Bills.
Correct.
Does that make it harder the last 10 years, or in some ways easier to be refreshed every few years?
You know what? I will probably – I don't know, because it's like you said, you do get refreshed, and, you know, it's a new system, but then you have to reprove yourself again. You know, you have to prove yourself again. You know, hopefully that the tapes that you had at a previous team will, you know, showcase themselves with a team that you're currently with. So it can go both ways, actually.
Manny, here's one way I'm sure that contributes to you being around this long, and I was just looking up some numbers. You've missed a total of 3 games total over the last 7 years. That's very
correct.
Impressive. How'd you manage to do that?
I could just say, you know, credit to the staff that we have that I work with, and, you know, just the due diligence to always be better and, you know, just prepare myself and understand, you know, exactly what my body needs, exactly what's good for me, and, you know, to put myself in the best position that I can be in.
And is that an off-season thing or an in-season?
Both. It's off-season and in-season.
How do you handle the off-season? You're about midway through your off-season now.
Off-season for me is, you know, really time to get away. And I need, you know, just time to get away from football, not to think about, you know, football, because whenever you start thinking about something and it becomes so mundane and it seems just like it's, you know, a part of the norm, it doesn't make it as fun. And so, you know, just to get away from football completely, and, you know, just whenever I'm back here and it's fun. And it's, you know, I can't wait until tomorrow. I can't wait until the next day that I get to do this again. And that way it just keeps you energized. It keeps you focused, or it keeps me energized, and it keeps me focused.
And when you get away, and you mentioned to me that you spent a lot of time in Scottsdale, Arizona, what do you like to do?
Most of my time there is, you know, just hanging out with the family. I work out there at Fisher Sports. A lot of times I just sit around and watch movies, get to go outside, you know, walk on trails, enjoy the weather, swim a little bit, you know, outdoorsy things and vacations.
That's great. Manny Lawson, our guest, he's in studio with us as OTAs go on this week. Why are OTAs important? What made it important for you to come cross country to, on a voluntary basis, really, to attend these organized team activities?
One, just, you know, just besides the new personnel and the new coaching staff, you know, you want to kind of, you know, get an understanding of what they expect out of you. And, you know, you want to also present, you know, what you can do to them. And, you know, for me to come here, I want my teammates to know that, you know what, that, you know, even though I wasn't here for, you know, a lot of the voluntary workouts, that, look, I'm still here, I'm still in shape, and I still know what my job is supposed to be. So you can count on me. And that's what I also want to show the coaches. And, you know, just to get us on the right foot and get our foot in the door and to, you know, get on with the season.
Is this your first contact this week with Rex Ryan and Dennis Thurman and Tony Sperano, the coaching staff?
This week, yes, but I came in, you know, when we had our first voluntary, you know, mini camp.
The veteran mini camp.
And just wanted to, you know, introduce myself to those guys. And then I went back off to Arizona, and I'm back here now. Now we're on a more, you know, team-oriented basis type thing. We're out there actually practicing, and we're out there coaching, and, you know, we're out there working around each other.
You were in at around the end of April. At that time, do you get a defensive playbook, something to take home with you and look at?
Or? You do. You know, you get your defensive playbook. You get, you know, terminologies and some of the plays, but everything is changing. So you always have to, you know, be in it. And, you know, where we are now in this technological age is that we have iPads, and so they automatically, you know, update if you have Wi-Fi. So I don't necessarily necessarily have to be here to get the update as long as it's put there on the iPad.
And did you look at it?
I did.
Okay. Manny Lawson is in studio. I'm not doubting you, but I mean, it'd be easy to put it aside and say,
it's very easy. And you just have to, you glance at it. You know, you don't have to, like, be in it every day and day in and day out. But, you know, glance at it. If you're thinking about it, you know, when it crosses your mind, hey, what was this again? You know, go back and look at it.
That sounds like the thing that a 10-year veteran would know how to do, how to study during the
season. You have to be on your game because, you know, everybody's fighting for a position, and including mine.
Manny Lawson in studio with us, the Bills linebacker. How familiar are you with the concepts of this defense based on what Coach Patton had here a couple of years ago?
You know, pretty familiar with it. Some of the terminology is different, but it's, you know, a lot of the things, there are some similarities. Now, there are some differences, too. And, you know, the differences that we have, we're going to have to spend time, you know, as a complete, you know, as a collective defense and focus on them.
You are working at outside linebacker after defensive end last year.
Correct.
How much of a shift is that for you?
It's not really that much of a shift. I mean, just now that instead of always rushing, I have to drop back and pass. And, you know, I play man-to-man a couple of times. But, this is my home, and this is what I like to do. I just get to create chaos in the backfield and disrupt passes and disrupt routes, and that's what I do best.
I was looking at some analytics stats, and obviously they're not grades that are given by coaches, but it appears, looking at some of the grades for pass coverage, pass rush, you'd had better grades 2 years ago than maybe what you had last year. Was that a function of the different position?
Different position and different roles. I think my role, you know, primarily last year was to, you know, be that relief body for, you know, our two tremendous ends. And, you know, I didn't mind doing that for those guys because those guys are, you know, very talented. And, you know, now that, you know, those guys can still play in their field and now I have my own, this is going to be something different.
So there might be a higher snap count for you, you think?
I think so.
Because there was,
I would like that.
2013 was a lot of snaps and it was almost cut in half, it looked like, last year. Huh?
I think so.
Yeah. And you'd like that. You'd welcome that even
in
10 years.
I love to be on the field. I want to be on the field in any and every opportunity I can.
More pass coverage responsibility in this defense for you?
Probably. There'll probably be more. It depends on, you know, which team we're playing and, you know, how we plan on scheming the team and, you know, exactly just what bodies that do we need out there on the field. And, you know, I don't mind, as long as I'm out there, I don't mind helping any way I can.
And they, wouldn't be able to cover. You've done that pretty effectively, but they probably wouldn't leave you out there on an island by yourself. Are we talking about dropping into zones, or are we talking about
probably
man
dropping
coverage?
Into zones? You know, some man to man, but probably with the safety over the top. You know, making sure that, you know, if I don't get beat, and you know, I got some help over the top, but probably not, you know, on the island too much, so too often.
And the other thing, the numbers show, and you had 4 sacks 2 years ago, and I think one or two last year. Is that
maybe
is that a function of being
maybe
on the outside? Two sacks?
Maybe 2 sacks. I can't recall.
It was one or two.
And it's just, I think, like 2 years ago, I was playing multiple positions, and I had multiple roles and multiple hats. And so you really couldn't, you know, focus on exactly where 91 was. And, you know, you didn't know if he was rushing or if he was dropping. And last year, you know, it was constantly, you know, you're going to get somebody on you all the time. And so, you know, with the, like I said, just a different scheme and the different roles, you know, opportunities do present themselves and some don't.
This sounds like, based on what you're telling me, this is a better fit for you.
I think so. I mean, I'm enjoying it. I'm enjoying it right now. I'm enjoying, you know, the hat that I wear and the role that I play. And, you know, I get to be pretty much a guy that gets to disguise whatever my job is. So if I'm supposed to rush, I can show that I'm dropping. If I'm supposed to drop, I can show that I'm rushing. And I have to play that guessing game, you know, make the quarterback play that guessing game with me.
Manny Lawson in studio with us, Bills outside linebacker. One of the things we wanted to talk to you about this week, at the end of this week, you're going to make a trip to Washington with veteran running back Fred Jackson for Honor Flight Buffalo. Tell us about that trip. What's that all about?
I don't want to be mistaken, so don't quote me, but I think this trip is, you know, Fred and I are going to go to D.C. with a bunch of veterans, and we're going to go and visit the monuments and, you know, just as far as like the veterans here in Buffalo, we're all going to go out there and, you know, just for the most part, just go back in time and, you know, understand exactly, you know, what the monuments stand for and what wars were fought and, you know, listen to stories and share stories and, you know, just be a part of that aspect.
World War II veterans, we're told they are. The 6 years that it's gone on, the Ralph Wilson Foundation, the Sabres, and Patrick Coletta's Hits Foundation, and they've got a charter flight for World War II veterans, you and Fred. And that'll be an interesting trip, I think, and a chance to, I mean, we talked about you being a 10-year veteran. Here's some real war veterans who would have stories to tell, I would think.
I think it's going to be it's very interesting, and you know, I wouldn't be surprised if it's a very, you know, emotional trip, because they'll be, you know, reliving a time when, you know, they have lost some loved ones and some friends and some, you know, for the most part, teammates themselves. And, you know, we're going to, like, you know, like I said, just relive that for them. And actually, Fred and I are going to, you know, see and kind of feel exactly what they went through and what they were going through.
Have you spent much time at the monuments around Washington?
No, World I haven't, War II? Actually. Yeah. So this is going to be brand new to me.
The World War II memorial is fairly new, and I've been there a couple times. It's really very moving with the different theaters of war, and it's a pretty amazing place. I think you'll like that. And Manny, you have a connection with this because you grew up in a service family, right? Tell us about that.
My father was in the Air Force, and he was in the Air Force for 20 years, and now he's retired. You know, just I'm a military brat, but I wasn't always moved around. I was very fortunate to be born in Omaha, lived in North Carolina, and you know, I have that. Just that military background, the respect, and, you know, show my respect for the veterans and what they did because of my father.
It's a great thing. It's coming up this Saturday. Manny and Fred Jackson is part of the Honor Flight Buffalo 6 year of flying World War II veterans to Washington, D.C. Manny, thanks. It's good to have you around again. Thanks for coming in today and doing this. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. It's good to be back.
Manny Lawson, Bills outside linebacker in studio with us. The John Murphy Show presented by NOCO from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Thanks again to Manny Lawson for joining us. Good to have him in studio. Good to have him back around the building. A pro's pro, Manny Lawson. He just knows how to get the job done. I think he could be looking for a big year based on his fit in this new/old Buffalo defense. Bills on the field today, the second day of their organized team activity, looking good in their practice uniforms. Looking good in uniforms is the particular specialty of our next guest. He is the man behind the UniWatch Power Rankings, and he joins us live on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Paul Lucas is with us. Paul, thanks for being on the air with us.
Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
The UniWatch Power Rankings Executive Committee, which I guess is you, right?
Yeah, the committee has a membership of one, and of course the power rankings are just one facet of the larger UniWatch project, which I've been doing for 16 years now, and been writing for ESPN for about 11 years.
Yeah, that's where we came across this, writing for ESPN. You have the NFL edition, and your Twitter page says UniWatch is engaged in, quote, the obsessive study of athletics aesthetics. How did you get that particular specialty?
Well, I spent a good chunk of the 90s writing about other kinds of design, like package design, brand design, product design, mostly for business magazines, but I was also always a big sports fan, and I realized I had kind of internalized and had a lot of opinions about sports design. And at that time, this was like in the late 90s, that there was really nobody writing about that, and I thought, well, that's sort of an unexplored sports beat, and let's see if we can kind of open that up. And that's how UniWatch was born.
Paul, I can't help thinking about the famous Jerry Seinfeld crack about how with free agency and trades and current professional sports, we're basically cheering for laundry. Is that what you're doing also?
In a way, well, I'm like any fan I am. Yeah, that's what I'm writing about, is the power of a uniform, because the players come and go. As you say, they're traded, they get injured, they retire, et cetera. But you know, to really capture the power of a uniform, you could say this. If I'm a big fan of the New York Mets, which in fact I am, and if I hate the New York Yankees, which in fact I do, and if those two teams were traded 25 guys for 25 guys, like even up, today, who do I root for tomorrow? And to me, it's obvious. I root for the guys wearing the Mets uniform, even if they were the 25 guys I hated the day before. And that's the power of a uniform. It's like this really intense form of brand loyalty, where the content of the brand and the quality of that content is changing all the time, and it doesn't really matter because you're still loyal to it. That's, you know, sports rooting. It's not particularly rational, but we keep doing it. You know, we keep rooting for or against those logos, those colors, and those uniforms.
Yeah, one of the things I like about your blog and the Uniwatch.com website, Paul, is that you're not afraid to let your particular biases in there, including the fact that you're very fond of striped socks when it comes to football uniforms, huh?
Actually, in most uniforms. It wasn't that long ago, like a generation ago in the NFL, pretty much everybody had striped socks. Usually it was just, you know, the part that's now a colored block, like over the calf area. Most teams had white stripes going through there. Now only a few still do that. The Bears still have the striped socks. And, of course, the Bills have striped socks, which definitely counts in their favor.
We're on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline with Paul Lucas, the author of the Uniwatch blog. He has written the Uniwatch Power Rankings NFL edition, and you're taking us right into the Buffalo Bills, who in the 32-team NFL, you have their uniforms ranked number 7. Paul, tell us why.
They would have ranked even higher if not for that that blue over blue, the solid blue combo that they did a couple of times. I guess maybe it was only once last season.
Yes.
But in general, I think the Bills have a very solid uniform. And they went from having one of the worst in the league, you know, like, what was it, about 4 years ago, to one of the best. Because they went back to the white helmet, which I think is much better than the red helmet. They've got a solid helmet logo, and any football uniform starts with a good helmet, right? And the Bills have a great-looking helmet. And they basically went back to basics after that other uniform they had that was, you know, too many bells and whistles, that weird, you know, sort of neon blue striping across the shoulders. And now they just have a classic, you know, when you think of NFL football, the Bills look like what an NFL team is supposed to look like.
You were not a fan of the 9-year experiment with the navy blue as opposed to the royal blue for the Bills, huh?
You know, I didn't like the navy as much as the royal, but besides that, it wasn't just the colors, but it was how they wore it. You know, they went so often with the solid navy, you know, the navy over navy, which was not how that set was designed to be worn. It was meant to be, you know, when it was first introduced, it was meant to be the navy over the white pants. But then some of the players started kind of telling the coaches and lobbying for the solid color, the navy over navy, and that became really their default look, and it was not a good look.
You know, I agree with you. Let me take you back. I do the Bills play-by-play. Last December, I think it was December 14th, Bills-Packers, the Bills trot out on the field with the monochromatic blue-on-blue tops and bottoms, and I thought, ugh, I don't know if I like that. The Bills go out and beat the Packers, arguably the best team in the NFL at that time. All of a sudden, those uniforms kind of grew on me. Is that irrational? What is that?
Some people get superstitious about, you know, oh, if you win in this uniform, you should keep it, and if you lose in this uniform, you should scrap it. I don't get too much into that, you know, in terms of performance, because I don't really think it matters. Everybody says, you know, you look good, you feel good, you play good. And I think we can all agree on that. The problem is that we don't all agree on what looks good, which is, you know, where that whole equation starts. And with the blue over blue, with the Bills, anytime you have the solid color in football, to me it stops looking like a uniform and starts looking more like a unitard, like a one-piece bodysuit, you know.
Yeah.
And to me, that's not what football is supposed to look like.
Paul Lucas is our guest. He is the author of the Uniwatch blog, and he's ranked all 32 NFL teams in a post on ESPN.com. Pittsburgh Steelers, best uniforms in the NFL. Tell us why you think that, Paul.
Well, you know, the teams at the top of the power rankings, the Steelers, the Raiders, the Bears, and the Packers, those have always, you know, in the 4 or 5 years I've been doing the power rankings, those have always been right up at the top, and I've sort of intermingled them a few times. You know, it's not that big a difference between those top four. But what I really liked about the Steelers, I started realizing that every time there was a Steelers game on, and I'm not a Steelers fan, I don't, like, root for them particularly, but anytime there was a Steelers game on, I was always thinking, oh, that's going to be a good-looking game. You know, like that's just a pleasure to look at, that uniform. And then they started using those Bumblebee throwbacks, which I know a lot of people hate.
Yeah.
But I kind of like the Bumblebee throwbacks, I got to say, in part because, like, it takes some audacity to go out wearing, you know, something that outlandish. And it does have their colors. It is part of their history. It's a 1930s uniform that they, you know, that they're proud of. It was part of their, you know, heritage. And good for them for having the guts to go out there wearing something that a lot of people, you know, when they look at that, they think, well, that's not how the NFL is supposed to look.
Yeah.
But I really I personally love that uniform, and I give them the sort of bonus points for having the guts to wear it. And then, you know, the Steelers have, like, all these little intangibles. In sports, you always hear about intangibles, right?
Yeah.
So the Steelers are the only team that have their logo on one side of the helmet. And why is that? That's because when they started wearing a logo back in the early 1960s, they weren't sure they were actually going to stick with it. It was sort of an experiment, and their equipment manager was told, just put them on one side of the helmet because, you know, if we decide we're not going to stick with this, you know, we don't want to have to remove them from both sides, you know, like peel off all those decals. So just put them on one side for now, and we'll see how it goes. And that's how they ended up, and they still have just on the one side of the helmet. And they have a few other things like that in their uniform program that I think qualify as the uniform version of intangible.
Paul, your post on ESPN, the 49ers, you've got ranked number 13, and your post directed me to, I guess I missed this, they have a black alternate uniform, and I clicked on the link that you had. That is a disaster. That black 49ers uniform, what are they thinking?
Yeah, that's a new alternate design that they've introduced for the coming season. That means, according to NFL rules, they can only wear it twice, thank God. And I actually am a 49ers fan. They're my favorite team ever since I was like 6 or 7 years old. And generally a good-looking team, but man, this solid black, it's black jersey over black pants, and that whole thing I was saying before about a bodysuit, that's what it looks like. And, you know, black is not a 49ers color, so this falls in the category of what we in the uniform world call BFBS, which is black for black's sake. There's no reason for it except, oh, people think black looks cool or black sells a lot of jerseys or whatever. Yeah. And it just looks ridiculous. It doesn't look like the 49ers. And it doesn't mesh with most of the rest of their uniform program. I sort of laid out a bunch of reasons why it just doesn't make sense. As a Niners fan, I'm really disappointed. So, yeah, I had previously ranked them in the top 10, but even as a Niners fan, I had to drop them down.
Cleveland Browns, Paul, the Cleveland Browns made a big deal about their uniform shakeup this offseason. And, again, clicking on the link that you posted in your ESPN post, that's awful. I mean, to have Browns, B-R-O-W-N-S, lettering down the pant legs, awful.
Yeah, they've got, you know, it's funny. Everybody gets so worked up about when the Browns tinker with anything because they're sort of the most famously conservative-looking team. And, of course, even though they do have a new uniform this season, they still don't have a logo on the helmet. So that's, like, the biggest thing. They didn't touch that. But they do have slightly updated jerseys, which I think personally look a little high schoolish because they've got this Cleveland lettering across the top of the chest. But then the big change, and I guess this was where Nike said, well, the one place where we can go a little crazy is the pants, which, as you say, has this lettering down the sides, and it's not subtle. It's like this big honking lettering down the side of the pant, each pant leg that says Browns. And you certainly can't miss it. I'll give them that. But it looks like an Arena League kind of move. It doesn't look like the NFL.
Looks awful. I know you do this for other professional leagues, and we're running out of time, but I'm curious, who's got the best uniform in Major League Baseball?
I've always been a fan of the St. Louis Cardinals uniform. I think it's the best-looking uniform in all of sports, not just Major League Baseball. Those birds on the bat are every bit as classic as the Yankee pinstripes. And, you know, you see a Cardinals player, and that to me, that is just like the essence of what baseball's supposed to be.
Are the Dodgers high in your rankings?
Yeah, I like the Dodgers look as well. Yeah. They're certainly in the top 10, maybe the top 5. I'd have to consult my notes, but they're up there. And anyone listening to this can tell, I'm kind of a classicist. I like the classic designs, and the classics are classic for a reason. They didn't get to be considered classic just by accident.
It's a lot of fun, Paul. We thank you for coming on the air with us tonight to talk about it.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, Paul Lucas is the author of the UniWatch blog, and you can log on to that at uniwatch.com, uniwatch.com. On ESPN.com, a post that went up last Thursday, the UniWatch Power Rankings NFL edition, the Buffalo Bills ranked number 7 among NFL uniforms, the Pittsburgh Steelers number 1, Jacksonville Jaguars dead last. Paul Lucas joined us via the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Subway, eat fresh. What did we learn from tonight's program? We'll talk about that when we return. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
This is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
It was a lot of fun talking with Paul Lucas about the uniforms. Different. Guy knows his stuff. You got to say that, Jay Harris, show producer Jay Harris. I'm going to say that all the time now. Show producer Jay Harris. He knows his stuff. He's not fooling around when he ranks uniforms and talks about uniforms, right? I think he knows what he's talking about.
No, and he has good backing for why. Yeah. I mean, it's basically, it's just preference.
Yeah.
And that's what he bases it on. But it's an interesting take and good tradition with what he likes in his in his jersey. So I like it.
Bills rank seventh.
Yeah. And you call me show producer Jay Harris everywhere, not just on the show.
Hey, show producer Jay Harris.
Yeah. Get over here.
So we learned about uniforms from Paul Lucas tonight. What else have we learned from tonight's show? Well, we had Manny Lawson on the show a little bit earlier on this hour. Manny, here at the OTAs, talked about how comfortable he is as he moves back to outside linebacker in this new Buffalo Bills defense.
It's not really that much of a shift. I mean, just now that instead of always rushing, I have to drop back and pass. And, you know, I play man-to-man a couple of times. But, this is my home, and this is what I like to do. I just get to create chaos in the backfield and disrupt passes and disrupt routes, and that's what I do best.
I actually watched Manny getting into some pass coverage today during the OTAs. He handles himself well. He's a very big – you know what he is? He's long. He's a big guy, but he's mostly long. Long legs, long arms. I think he's pretty decent in pass coverage, as a matter of fact, because of those attributes. And I do think, as I've said a couple of times tonight, he is probably going to be in line for a pretty good year after not getting on the field as much as he would have liked last year. What else have we learned from tonight's show? Well, Albert Breer, NFL Network reporter, in town covering OTAs today. He's got a post going up on NFL.com tomorrow about the Bills and Rex Ryan, and Albert Breer took a couple of minutes to sit down with us and talk a little bit tonight. He talked about Rex Ryan, and he says Rex possibly could be a better coach now that he's been fired once.
What's so interesting about it to me is how many coaches are successful after they get fired. And we oftentimes we forget about that, mm-hmm. you know, but
Belichick, look, the Sterling
five,
example.
Five coaches have won the Super Bowl this decade. Three of them were fired. Pete Carroll, Tom Coughlin, and Bill Belichick. All three of those guys were fired. And the one thing that I found that was interesting was the commonality between those guys is that they landed in a place where they could kind of do it their way.
Interesting. You know, sometimes you need that outside perspective to come in, producer Jay Harris, show producer Jay Harris, and sort of enlighten. I mean, I guess I never thought of that, but he's right. Recent Super Bowl winning coaches have been fired previously in the NFL, right?
They've gone on to have success, and there's some backing to that, too.
Yeah.
I think we did talk about it, or we had somebody on that talked about that when Rex Ryan first came in here.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was his first go around, and now I think he knows the routine, and he's starting over, and he's had a chance to hire coaches and bring in those that he's comfortable with.
Yep, that's what we've learned tonight. We want to thank our presenting sponsor, NOCO, family-owned, locally operated since 1933. Like NOCO on Facebook.com/NOCO for great deals, specials, and more. Our engineer tonight, Mike Jafari. Jay, producer, show producer, Jay Harris is our show producer. And the director of broadcasting is Jeff Matthews. Tomorrow night, 7 o'clock, we're on the air. And among our guests tomorrow, Tyrod Taylor. Be with us for that. John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.